Star Market Celtics tonight continues from the Garden. Celtics and the Sixers late Saturday night here at the Garden. Our conversation with the head coach brought to you by Star Market's Just For You digital app. Earn rewards, save on your groceries and gas. Download the Star Market mobile app or visit starmarket.com. There will be ebbs and flows over 82 games. That's inevitable. The most consistent shooters will slump. The most consistent defenders will slump. To what do we attribute your midseason slump, I guess, in coaches' challenges?
Yeah. Good question.
Didn't know where that was going.
Good question. You want me to throw him under the bus too?
I don't. My wife
gave me a lot of flack for pointing out
other people,
my assistant. But we were joking about it. It was more they were asking me what happened between when Ken Maurer and I were having the back and forth, and I said, Ken, if you won't blame anybody, blame him. And then, you know, then I became a blamer. So that's not what I want to be. But I have chosen to challenge two straight calls that have been proven to be the right calls by their judgment, and we move on.
It's funny, I had no intent. I just wanted to do the shtick and then move on. But now that it's been discussed, it always reminds me that Max and I are constantly talking about with the challenges, and not the things themselves, but the decision when something happens 3 minutes into a game.
Yeah.
Who knows if it's going to be the most important moment or not? That seems to be the most agonizing part of it.
Well, and like, so that game the other day, the difference between that one and the one the game before, you know, the one the game before, it was like, you know, in retrospect, I probably wouldn't have challenged it, but you have two timeouts to use before 3 minutes. So you actually, if you lose it, you're going to lose the timeout anyway. So it's a really safe challenge to make. The one on Thursday, you know, we had just gotten the lead back up to 15. It was a chance to kind of salt that game away at that point in time. And I felt like, and it wasn't going to be a jump ball. It was either going to be a block or a charge. And so I felt like we could, it was a good time to use it. And, you know, those are all the decisions you're making in right before they hand the ball to the shooter, which has made it, a lot more to think about than there used to be.
You know, there's nothing really to discuss when it comes to injuries. Injuries are injuries, but is there any frustration level here when you're doing literally, you have all of science, everything available, doing every single thing you can do, and yet here it is almost every night there's somebody new.
Yeah, and that's part of this stretch, too. Like, Kimba's been dealing with this knee and managing it well throughout the course of the year, and he's had a couple of days where it's really flared up. And unfortunately, Thursday night in the game, you could kind of tell he didn't have his normal pop. You know, I think about the layup that he waited for Robinson. He usually just reaches out, and bursts up, and finishes it. And then Friday morning when he came in, he was hurting. And so, you know, yesterday we said we'd wait till today, see how he feels today. And, you know, he couldn't go. And so, and I think that we're going to have him out tonight most likely, or probably have him out Monday, and then reevaluate. And it may go beyond that. We've got to get him to feeling great. That's really important. And, you know, for the most part, he has. But this stretch has tested everybody, and, you know, unfortunately it flared up.
That was something really interesting that you kind of went through there. How much of injuries and guys being hurt or decision-making, all of it, comes from little things like that that you observe? Because, I mean, guy, we're not going to be taken in by a guy, like, limping, hobbling down the court. It has to be. It's more subtle than that. Right?
Yeah, that was when I turned and asked if he was feeling okay. And I knew that, you know, he had been dealing with a little bit of soreness, but it just looked like it was a little bit more. And so, again, obviously we wish we had him. We're way better with him, but we're going to have to figure out how to be great tonight against a really good team without him.
Yeah, which brings me to this. And each of these games with the Sixers has been so different. They come at different places of the season. No Kemba and Cantor tonight. No Smart in one of the games here. No Embiid last time. No Horford in December. So that sort of brings me to this. And it's sort of a freebie the way I lead up to it. But does it matter? Let's say, for the sake of our discussion, meaning Max and I, there is a second-round playoff series on May the 3rd that begins. Does it matter if the season series, if you didn't win a game in the season series?
Well, you could probably go back and look at it. I don't know if what's done in the past, you know, would it change the way that we would approach that series either way? Absolutely not. You know, I think you're gathering information all throughout the regular season against each opponent. There are some tough matchups, both individually and team-wise, that you have to manage and you have to account for. We're going to try some new stuff tonight, and we'll just keep figuring ourselves out, you know, and I think that that's the most important thing. Obviously, it'll be a little bit, you know, it'll be a little bit less information just because you don't have two of your guys that would play a pretty significant role against these guys.
All right, they don't have Josh Richardson. They've gone through different stretches of the season now. They had that long stretch without Joel Embiid. And the interesting part about the last few weeks is that all of a sudden, Shake Milton, who was barely playing, now is not only playing, he's playing at a very high level. And defensively, he's someone that you, I don't think people were really thinking about as someone who could impact the game, but he has.
Both ends, he's very good. 27 points in the last game at Atlanta. I thought he was their best player in that game, probably other than Simmons. Simmons was awfully good. But you know, they've got these the two studs that the whole thing is built around, and then Allen and Harris, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're helping on all those different guys, and a guy like Shake Milton or Korkmaz, or last game it was Richardson, had 28 points against us, or Mike Scott here had 12 on four threes. Like, you know, it's the problem with having to account for, you know, Embiid and Simmons and Harris and Horford on top of that.
We've talked about Ben Simmons before, and the Joel Embiid thing, the more I think about it, I used to ask this question. This is how long I've been doing this. I've asked this question to your various predecessors, and I used to ask it about Kevin Garnett when he was in Minnesota. And the question was, does he affect the game more offensively or defensively because Kevin Garnett was so elite on both ends? And it made me wonder about Joel Embiid and kind of asking the same question.
I think you have to approach the game in making him earn everything on both those ends is my answer. So he's effective on both ends. You have to stretch him on both ends. It's easier said than done. He's getting so much better against the double team than he used to be. You know, and obviously he has a physical advantage over the guys that are going to be guarding him in isolation tonight. So you got to do all your work way before he catches the ball. And that's not just the person guarding him. You know, it goes back to we better be a great ball pressure team tonight. Otherwise, it just gets too low on the court and they're too physical, too physically gifted for us if the ball gets too low on the court. On the other end, you got to stretch him out. Like, you got to be able to shoot it, which, you know, I thought Tyson Cantor actually attacked him pretty well the last time we were here, had 36 and scored different ways, scored on catch and shoots, scored in the seams, scored at the rim. And then, you know, that hopefully puts a little bit of doubt in your mind as you're guarding a pick and roll of how much you help and how much you don't.
That's the head coach. We arrived finally at the end of a week, unlike any other really in the NBA, and we were in different cities as this happened, and so many of the teams have had home games and had their chance. But I know everybody in the league sort of gathered last night, and I think seeing what the Lakers did last night and seeing Staples Center, I think, was important for everybody in the league to experience.
It was really unbelievable. What a tribute. You know, I thought LeBron was incredible with his words. I thought, obviously, the video tributes and the music that went along with it. And then, I mean, every one of these games, I can't imagine, you know, how hard it's been to play. I thought, you know, coming straight off our video to playing on Thursday night was really hard. And I can't even fathom what it was like for those guys yesterday on both those teams. And, you know, but they kicked off what is certain to be a number of ways to honor him and the other people that were in the crash and, you know, and memorialize him probably in a lot of different venues. And so I thought it was really, really special.
That's the final word. Celtics and Sixers next on the WROR Celtics Radio Network.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.